a free model, and you get a free model, and you get a free model. Hey there, welcome to another utterly fantastic episode of Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by EEJournal.com, and hosted by me, Amelia Dalton. Yes, free is a very good price. And in the land of electronic engineering, it's a price that should not be taken lightly. My guest today is Greg Roberts from EMA Design Automation, and we're talking about why the largest EDA model library in the world is now free, the verification of their models, and a little bit about the mechanical side of PCB design. All right, let's go. Hey, Greg, thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me, Amelia. It's great to be here.
Okay, so first off, give my audience a quick update on what EMA Design Automation is all about.
Sure. EMA is it's both a value-added reseller and an EDA company. We provide complete PCB design solutions, which is really the reseller part. And sometimes we need to create additional software solutions to fill in the gaps, which is where we kind of become an EDA company. On the EDA side, we offer products to manage PCB design and data, software that performs various checks and validation, timing analysis tool called Timing Designer, library creation tools, and of course, libraries. Our goal is to be that one-stop shop for everything you need to create your electronics. So that's really what EMA is all about.
All right, Greg, it's time to talk about models. Now, you guys have got the largest EDA model library in the world, and now it's free? So tell me about the motivation to make your library free of charge.
I know, crazy, huh? Well, to answer that question, I'd like to start with why we created UltraLibrarian in the first place. When we work with our PCB design customers, we found that they're spending far too much time building symbols, footprints, and 3D models, you know, those library parts that they need. And it's kind of a thankless task that seems like a side project, keeping away from their real job of designing the circuits they need for their product. On top of that, we found that it wasn't uncommon for them to make errors in the models they created, which of course leads to problems later in the design process or even manufacturing or test. So our first solution was to create a part creation tool to make it faster and easier to create correct parts. The tool was pretty popular with our customer base, but what they really wanted was to have a library with all the parts and all the models in it that they would ever need. Kind of a crazy goal, I know, but we started looking into that, and we found that it was going to be a very daunting task. We didn't even know how many models that would even be. So in our looking around, we found a guy, or we actually met him before, a guy named Frank, and yes, that's really his name. And Frank was running a small company that built models for IC manufacturers. He already had a library of over 7 million components, and he could output the models in over 20 different CAD formats. So we considered that and realized it wasn't just a good start for our customers. It was really a good solution for the entire PCB design industry. So we brought Frank's entire organization into EMA and worked out a plan to expand the library. When we launched the library, we provided a small number of parts for free, but then we charged for the rest of them. What we found, though, was that it really held back a lot of our customers, you know, the thought of having to buy models. And really, we want everyone coming to UltraLibrarian to get their symbols, footprints, and 3D models, so we decided to simply make them all free. And right now, we're getting over 20,000 downloads a month, so clearly something in here is resonating with the market.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's talk about that library. Now, the size of your library has grown from 7 million to over 14 million parts in less than 2 years. So first off, what's all included in the UltraLibrarian? And all of your models are verified, correct?
Yeah, so let me talk about that. UltraLibrarian is primarily a library of symbols, footprints, and 3D models, but we also offer some desktop tools to create those models. And Frank's team actually uses that software for the creation of everything that's in the library, and that's part of the reason we're able to build so many models so quickly. It's especially helpful for larger and more complex models where the software is able to grab information from the data sheet, automate the building, understand the IPC standards, and then, of course, verify the results. Also, when we build each part, maybe because it's a request from a customer or part of a contract with an IC manufacturer, we don't just build that one part. We build the entire family of related parts. And in most cases, every part gets a symbol, footprint, and 3D model, so customers get everything that they need related to that part. So by using the UltraLibrarian desktop software and methodical creation methods, we're able to add content to our library at an amazing rate. Oh, and you asked about verification, so let me address that. As part of our build process, we perform over 30 validation checks to verify that everything that we're capturing and generating is correct. These checks look at the individual pieces for accuracy, like validating that all the reference pins exist and match on both the symbol and footprint. They also look at manufacturability, like ensuring the silk screen doesn't overlap the pads. Another example is a QFN-style part with a large heat tab. If you simply cover the heat tab with solder paste, you can easily end up with too much paste, and that in turn causes the part to lift in manufacturing and can result in bad solder joints. And of course, you don't usually find those until you get into the test phase of your project. When we build parts, we take that into account, and we do things like use a window pane method for placing solder paste to avoid the problem. Also, many of our library components are built under contract with IC manufacturers and connector manufacturers. For those parts, the manufacturers provide their specifications on how they want the various pieces built, and then they provide their own additional verification of the resulting library parts. Does that answer your question?
It does, absolutely. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the mechanical side of PCB design. Now, UltraLibrarian can also help me with this part of my PCB design life, right?
That's right. More and more of our electrical engineers and PCB designer customers are required to look at more than just the electronics that they're responsible for. With sophisticated electronics going into cool-looking thermostats and watches and drones, it's no longer enough to build just working electronics. Now our customers need to build electronics that fit into some designer's form factor, and that means planning for space. That's why 3D models of electronic parts have become so popular to our customer base. All modern PCB design tools provide 3D visualization, and guess what? Most of them don't come with any kind of a 3D model library. So that may not sound like a big deal, but remember we're talking about electrical people, not mechanical people. Many of our electrical customers don't have MCAD tools, and even if they do, they don't often have the training, expertise, or even the desire to create 3D models. And like the electrical components, they really just want to download them from somewhere. There are general 3D CAD models download sites, but typically they have generic electronic models like an SOIC 24. And wouldn't it be nice to download the correct 3D model for your specific part number? So that's what we try to provide with UltraLibrarian. We have 3D models for nearly all of our parts, and our 3D models line up perfectly to fit with the associated footprint. And that's about as easy as it gets.
Very cool. All right, Greg, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, I heard that you recently used a CAD model to design something in your life outside of work. So tell me more about that.
Yeah, that's one of the things I've always liked, building things. And one of my projects was to build a wrought iron balcony railing and matching side gate. I wanted to build a nice one with some fancy iron scrolls. So I found a vendor who had an assortment of scrolls that I could just buy and weld together. And guess what? To my surprise, they actually provided CAD models for the scrolls. And that let me design both of the pieces and present the design to my wife for approval before I built it. I don't know, it sounds like an engineering task, doesn't it?
It really does.
It's not really that formal in my family, but I think it's funny that in my own hobby, I wanted to download the models rather than create them. In any case,
right.
I have this beautiful gate and railing that I can say I designed and built and maybe even make my neighbors jealous. So that's kind of a fun thing.
Nice. I like it. Well, Greg, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Amelia.
You know what else is free? Waste heat. Yeah. No one, absolutely no one, loves excess waste heat. But what if waste heat could be captured and recycled and used again? Well, researchers at the University of California, Berkeley, may have just developed a thin film that could do just that. Okay, so this team at UC Berkeley is targeting what is called low-quality waste heat. Basically, any waste heat that is below 100 degrees Celsius or 212 degrees Fahrenheit. And this thin film they're working on, well, it works using the principle of pyroelectric energy conversion. And the results of these little pyroelectric film prototypes that measure only 50 to 100 nanometers thick are pretty gosh darn amazing. These little films have a power density of 526 watts per centimeter and an energy density of 1.06 joules per centimeter and a Carnot efficiency of 19%. And yes, if you were wondering, that is record-breaking for this kind of energy conversion. And so those results, well, they lend themselves very nicely to harvesting waste heat from high-speed electronics, especially with fluctuating heat sources.
These researchers also contend that this thin film can turn waste heat into usable energy with higher energy density, power density, and efficiency levels than any other form of pyroelectric energy conversion. And the coolest or hottest part of this study is the idea that these films could be optimized for individual systems. If we gather and recycle the energy from, say, a data center, what if we could do that with an embedded computer? Or a car, even? Lane Martin, senior author of the study, puts it perfectly. These thin films can help us squeeze more energy than we do today out of every source of energy. I couldn't have said it better myself. If you want any further information about this study at UC Berkeley, I've included a link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com that will take you directly to an awesomely dense white paper called Pyroelectric Energy Conversion with Large Energy and Power Density in Relaxer Ferroelectric Thin Films. And if you want even more information about another first in the pyroelectric universe, you should check out a Fish Fry episode from earlier this year in February called It's Getting Hot in Here, New Technologies in Thermal Management. In that episode, I investigate a new pyroelectric-based energy harvesting technology developed at MIT called a thermal resonator that takes energy right out of the air. Literally. So maybe you've got a waste heat issue. Yeah, well, join the club. And that might mean you're developing a high voltage, high capacitance application. If that is the case, you will need a robust, reliable capacitor solution. In a brand new episode of Chalk Talk called AVX High CV SMD Capacitor Solutions, I sit down with Chris Reynolds from AVX and we dive deep into the fascinating details of choosing a high CV SMD capacitor for your next design. And you can check out this episode of Chalk Talk by navigating on over to the Chalk Talk section of eejournal.com by clicking the link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com or head on over to YouTube, keyword eejournal. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if LinkedIn is your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have that YouTube channel I mentioned earlier. Keyword EE Journal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of super cool techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series. And also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can find the Fish Fry archive, or even subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you everyone for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of April 20th, 2018, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.